open up the champagne. Pop. It's my house. Come on. Turn it up. Hear a knock on the door.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm here for CBD. And today, obviously, a big article at NFL.com from Mike Silver about Hugh Jackson. Really an inside look at his thought process leading up to the hiring. A lot of the thoughts since the hiring about Hugh Jackson. An absolute must read and must read for all Browns fans. And even better, we are very happy to have Mike Silver himself on today at 2 o'clock. So Mike Silver from NFL Network and NFL.com. On the first 33 weeks of Hugh Jackson's tenure, he will discuss that and all the expectations and everything about Hugh and the Browns and this process. That's at 2 o'clock. At 1:15, we'll hear from the head coach, Hugh Jackson. 1:30, Andrew Gribble. And 2:15, we've got RG3, maybe even Nate Orchard, plus it's Mailbag Wednesday. So you can tweet us at using the show, at hashtag AskCBD, at Nathan Zagura, at Browns underscore daily, at Matt Wilhelm 35. And Matt, certainly a very, very, very interesting article from Mike Silver today. What was kind of your initial reaction? I know you just kind of poured through it here a moment ago. What was kind of your initial reaction to the piece and what Mike Silver had to say?
I just think, for me, it's a great look at the inside conversations and the actions, you know, leading up to Hugh Jackson becoming our head football coach. And, of course, the documentation of what happened thereafter, which you and I know very well. But just some of the quandaries that Hugh was left in with, you know, talking to Marvin Lewis about becoming the heir apparent there in Cincinnati when he hangs things up, to contemplate taking that trip on that Wednesday to New York in, you know, to see the Giants and see that through, the canceling of the Dolphins interview because they've now, you know, they went with Adam Gase, and, you know, some of the question marks with Hugh kind of being in the Bay Area and having that history and contemplating, you know, the opportunity with the San Francisco 49ers that of course went to Chip Kelly. We knew all those things because of reports and, you know, you're, you know, shooting it off of Twitter or Bleacher Report. But to just get an understanding and an opportunity to go inside the head of Hugh Jackson and see this scenario play out in his mind, his emotions, his mentality, and then to ultimately, you know, draw that line in the sand, as I like to say, and jump in. And then also for this organization, the presentation, I guess, that they did for Hugh Jackson to acquire him as our head coach, you know, Hugh's comments about, you know, Dee Haslam and the, you know, the close conversations that they had, their first conversations when he walked in that building. And I know, Nathan, you were a part of the,
that was such a cool moment,
the almost the entire franchise of employees, you know, down in and around the lobby here in Berea to welcome their new head coach, and his speech, which, you know, which is kind of completely off the cuff as he was caught off guard, just that inside look. And that's why I love doing what I do by being upstairs as opposed to being a player, which you're always downstairs. You only come upstairs to get fired or to sign a new contract. And so to be up here and understand what goes into an NFL franchise, and in this case, just to get behind the scenes look at Hugh Jackson and, you know, the trials and tribulations that went on in him becoming our head football coach.
And it's just such an interesting story. And I think that, you know, you talked about that moment, and that was really, that's where the article starts, when he walked through and how that moment, and he knew he was in the right place from that. And one of the neater things I've gotten an opportunity to be a part of here with the Browns coming in, he gave that, you know, quick impromptu speech, as it's referred to in the article, about, you know, we're going to be chasing greatness and how happy he was to be here. And you could tell just how happy everybody in this organization was. And at the end of the day, you know, Hugh Jackson knows it's a performance business and that winning is how performance is measured in the National Football League. And he also knows it's not going to happen overnight, but he wants to go after it and get it done as soon as possible. And that's what this season's about, figuring out those young guys that are going to be a part of that and going forward. But it's an article everybody should read. It's at NFL.com/33 weeks, the first 33 weeks of Hugh Jackson's tenure here, from a guy who is close personal friends with Hugh Jackson, knows his inner thoughts, inner workings more than anyone else. And it's a fascinating article to get Hugh's perspective on Dee Podesta and Sashi and Andrew Berry and the difference in this regime versus others and the difference in this organization versus others. And I it's a fantastic read, and I'm very excited. We'll have Mike Silver for you at 2 o'clock. A lot going on. So at 1:15, we'll hear from Hugh Jackson himself. 1:30, Sir Andrew Gribble joins us in studio. And then, of course, 2 o'clock, Mike Silver live. 2:15, we also will have Robert Griffin III, maybe 2:30. And we'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. I said as well, it is Mailbag Wednesday. And, Matt, today is the final day before the last preseason game of the year against the Chicago Bears at First Energy Stadium tomorrow night. And it is an opportunity for guys who are on the bubble to put forth their final good effort to try to cement their spot on this team. It's also for those same guys the final opportunity to put some good film out there so that hopefully you can land somewhere else. As a person going into this last preseason game, or as a player who may not know he's making this team, and I would imagine that less people feel comfortable than probably in normal situations following the release of Paul Kruger and the trade of Andy Lee, but what goes through a player's mind in this last game?
Well, I think there's got to be conversations as you go into this last preseason game, you know, with your position coach and with your coordinator, so you know exactly where you stand and essentially how much you're going to play, potentially play in this football game, so that you can have your mind right and have your body prepped for whether it's 10 plays or 40 plays, you know. And for those bubble guys, it's probably going to be more like 40 plays. And I think even furthermore, you want to have a conversation with your agent and speak to your agent to get a real feel and understanding about what your agent thinks you need to do and a better understanding of what this final roster is going to look like with Hugh Jackson, Sashi Brown, Andrew Berry, Paul Dee Podesta, because, you know, maybe past history is we're going to be a little corner heavy, or we're going to be an offensive heavy football team. So if you're an offensive player and you play well in this game, you will fall into the favor of Hugh Jackson. Now, we don't have a lot of history because there really is none for Sashi Brown and Andrew Berry, Paul Dee Podesta, Hugh Jackson putting together a roster. But there are certain little thoughts that can pass through your head, you know, from your position coach or from your agent that will help you mentally prepare for this football game. And then it's just a matter of going out, because this is going to be the first and the fourth preseason game are essentially the same. They are the most vanilla game plans. And I hate to say it, but even some of the coaches who, you know, have their guys out there, you know, they kind of know the writing's on the wall that some of these guys are not making the final 53-man roster, and yet you have to coach them. And that's just, you know, kind of like around the league, whereas Hugh Jackson and his staff may be a little bit different. But they're going to go out there and they're going to do the basic stuff. And if these guys can grasp the basic stuff and continue to fight, and Hugh sees the fight on special teams, on offense and or defense, as I said, you can fall into the good graces to where the coaches and management might have thought this guy was going to be the guy. But if you can get into one of those 50-50 situations, then you start digging into money and, you know, and upside and development and, sure, and so on and so forth, to where the point, you know, you get, and I've talked to, you know, a couple coaches, you know, that are now coaching at the collegiate level that have been in the pros before. It's like, man, when a guy fights for you, you know, and it comes to like crunch time, like it is, you know, going to be between Thursday night and Saturday at 4 p.m. when if the final roster gets announced, is whose coach is standing on the table pounding his fist for his guy? And there's probably going to be three or four positions that are going to be banging for one extra guy. I got to have this guy. And for these reasons, you know, and you lay out why this guy and why for the Cleveland Browns, why must we keep him? And then you get to have, then you put the deliberation into Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown to figure out who they actually keep and who they don't. So at this point right now, is your thoughts is to go out and do enough that your position coach will fight for you, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. It makes perfect sense, because those are the guys that are going to be fighting and pulling and pounding the table to keep guys around. I think in the Tampa game, the one guy who helped himself more than anybody was Taylor Gabriel. 6 catches for 60 yards in that one, and you're going to see if people can help themselves here going forward in this game number 4. I do think it's interesting with the starters playing. John Fox has said, by the way, he's not altering his plan at all. You will not be seeing the starters of the Chicago Bears. I have one question for you, though, for this game, because we're going to get starters in. Obviously, hopefully they go out, they have success, they get out healthy, and then we're on to Philadelphia. But would you want to see Josh McCown at all in this game? Or do you think this would be a great game to, once RG3 sits down, just get Cody Kessler as much exposure, opportunity, reps as possible? Because Josh McCown's a veteran. We know he's going to be ready.
A veteran. A veteran.
Yeah, I think you are going to see Josh McCown. And it may be, if RG3 goes the first two series, you might see Josh McCown for the next two series. Just to keep that edge and stay sharp, to be one play away, as I continually like to say. And then give the remainder of the game to Cody Kessler. You know, good, bad, and indifferent for his development. But I just think there is no other way. Even though Josh McCown has played and started in X amount of games, there's always an edge, an adrenaline, a preparation that you have to have on game day that makes it different, as opposed to just sitting back and getting dressed and never playing and going through the motions in practice. Sure. There's something to go out there and do it, even when the twos, you know, other Chicago Bears bullets will be flying. It's just at another level, at another speed that you can't mimic in practice.
No, I think you're right about that. I think there's validity to that. I do want to see a lot of Cody Kessler in this game as you're trying to get him some real NFL experience going forward. And you talked earlier about the coach balancing. I know Hugh Jackson wants to try to get all 75 guys time in this game so that they can get those guys at the bottom, have an opportunity to at least put some film out there, whether it be to stay with the Browns or not. But I do think corner is going to be an area that they're going to look at these guys hard. I'll be interested to see how much time Derek Kindred gets with the ones when they play those couple series early. I think he's a guy who's made a real push and has been a real standout to Hugh Jackson and this coaching and football staff here with the Cleveland Browns. The other question I'm going to have is, how did Danny Shelton and Jamie Meter play? Is Jamie Meter getting more time with the ones? Where's Danny Shelton fitting into this defense? Because against Tampa and Atlanta, he played well into the second half, even though the quote-unquote starters were out. He did not really play at all in the nickel situations against Tampa Bay. So where's Danny Shelton at right now with this coaching staff and with this team?
He's making this team.
Well, obviously.
Right, he's making this team. And I think that, as we've talked to Danny earlier in the offseason, you know, his expectation was to be a three-down player and not come off the field. And I don't believe at this point right now he's a guy who has to fight to get on the field. I think that Danny Shelton falls into a niche. He falls into a category. He falls into a game plan specific role on this defense. And the reason why is for multiple plays, Danny Shelton doesn't give you what you need, either from a physical standpoint for 3 to 5 plays or from a athletic standpoint, whereas you can take him off the field and you get that out of Xavier Cooper in a burst. Or you take him off the field and you get the physicality out of a John Hughes and the athleticism of a John Hughes. And what I'm saying is, and the reason why is, it just allows you to do more. When you have a big 300 to 310-pound guy that can move and is physical, there are a lot of things you can do. Different stunts, different defenses,
sure.
You just like them better in go situations, which is just blitz your gap and beat your man. And right now, Danny's not showing that, at least on the NFL level. We loved what he did at Washington because the guy was going numbers to numbers, penetrating, tackles for a loss, sacks, so on and so forth. But he is yet to get to become that player 25 pounds removed for the Cleveland Browns. And so when we're in that base 3-4 defense and we need a nose to just latch onto two guys and take on a double team, Danny Shelton's your guy. You know, but we have to have the more playmakers we can add on the football field, the better. And I don't necessarily know at this point right now if Danny Shelton is a playmaker.
So one thing that I talked about last night with Hugh Jackson on the Hugh Jackson Show was, with the move of Paul Kruger wanting to get Nassib, who's really impressed him, and Agba on the field more, are we going to see more four-man fronts? And his answer was yes. That is something that they are switching to, and they're going to utilize more of that. In a four-man front, where would Danny Shelton fit in?
Well, four-man front, I mean, essentially, from a base defense standpoint, you play over, you play under. And the ends are technically almost the same in an over and under defense. You might move them, you know, a half of a gap. But all you're doing is and I'll say it's a right call, strong right, is in an over defense, you put the three technique to the strength, and you have a nose backside, you know, on the backside now in that one technique, on the backside playing the weak A gap. And in an under defense, all you do is you put the nose on the front side A gap and the three technique to the weak side. So in the 3-4 defenses that I have played, and I think what we've seen so far, is the nose is in the front side A gap and the backside three technique, When you get to a 4-3, it flips.
Okay.
So you get a frontside 3 technique and a backside A-gap player.
Would that? Do you think that is something that could help Danny Shelton?
Because I do.
He can penetrate his gap?
He can penetrate his gap, and I think what it does is they're no longer attacking. I mean, predominantly, you want to put a 3 technique to the front side because that's where an offense wants to run, to their strength. Yep. So you put a 3 technique there, so it reduces, you know, the number of double teams that you can get. And what it does, it puts Danny in that 1 technique on the backside in a one-on-one situation where it's really a beat-your-man situation. So, yeah, it could absolutely work in our favor.
It absolutely, I think, can. And I think he needs something to jumpstart it. I wanted to see, you know, Danny Shelton find his groove with this defense because he's a guy you want to play at a high level given where he was drafted and what he means to this organization. I can say I know that the coaches are actually very pleased with the development of Cam Irving, knowing that he is a work in progress, but they think the strides he's made is as a center so far this year, they're very confident in him that he can anchor this offensive line. So those are the two first-rounders from a year ago. Justin Gilbert still in the concussion protocol as we understand it. Not sure. I don't think he'll be able to play now. Not sure about his status yet for week 1 against the Philadelphia Eagles. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. We'll hear from the head coach of your Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson, as well. And then tomorrow, on tomorrow's show, we'll preview Game 4. But we're going to go through this roster position by position, give you what to watch for Friday coming out of the game. We'll recap the game, see who helped or hurt themselves, and then we'll know on Saturday by 4 o'clock who at least the first wave of this new 53 men will be for the Cleveland Browns before waivers on Sunday and the final roster gets set headed into week 1 against the Eagles. Zagur and Wilhelm here on CBD.
There ain't no secrets anymore. My name's been hanging.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. And now let's hear from the head coach of your Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson.
No, I think I'm going to think about it tonight. But, I mean, they're going to play, obviously. Haven't thought through exactly how much, but they're definitely going to play.
Does it include Joe Hayden?
It includes anybody who's a starter on our team. You know, we're going to let them play, and, you know, we'll get them out of there, you know, soon enough. But they need to play.
Did you like what you saw out of Joe in his first game?
Oh, yeah. I think Joe is rounding into form, you know. But I think, you know, it's good for him to get out there and play and get back in the game. And, you know, he's had some good practices and a great practice today. And I'm sure he'll go out and play well.
Did you, the trade of Andy Lee, did you address whether what happened in the game Friday night with that tackle had anything to do with the trade?
No, that had nothing to do with it. No, not at all. I mean, obviously we've seen an opportunity to you know, better our situation here for the future. I totally support, you know, our team as far as making those decisions. You know, again, it's probably unheard of to get a fourth-round pick in that situation for a good player, you know, and he'll go back to Carolina, and I'm sure he'll help that football team. But there's also some punters out there that we liked that we are going to put on our team to also give us a chance to still be successful in that area. Oh, yeah, no, it wasn't. I can guarantee everybody that wasn't it. Obviously, I was disappointed in what happened at that time, and I told him so. But that had nothing to do with the decision that we made yesterday.
In the experimenting and mixing and matching that you've done,
mm-hmm.
I understand that's going to pay dividends in the long run, but do you think that has set you back a little bit in your development as a team?
Honestly, I don't know that it has. I don't know that it hasn't. I just, you know, as I've said since day one, our head's down. We're just working, and we're going to continue. If we have to continue to mix and match, then we will. Hopefully we'll trot out a team that we feel very comfortable with that go play well. My job as a head coach is to make sure that we are in the best position to win offensively, defensively, and special teams. So if that means we have to keep doing that till we can make it right, then that's what we'll do. But I think I'm very comfortable with where we are. I know what we're doing and how we're doing it. I know what it may appear to look like, but I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned about this team getting better over the course of this week and as we head into the regular season. Well, I mean, obviously the guys I mentioned yesterday, exactly who the starters are going to be, I mean, that will, you know, be revealed, obviously, on Thursday night. But we have four candidates, you know, that's going to go out there and play, and we're going to play them all, you know, and give them opportunity to go out there and show what they can do. That's what the game's for, you know, so guys can showcase their talent and ability. So we'll see exactly how that unfolds Thursday night. Absolutely. I think it's really important. You know, he's been off to a pretty good start. I mean, if you can score a touchdown a game and catch some long ones, that's pretty good. But, no, he needs to stay in it. You know, obviously he won't be able to be out there with the team at practice, but he'll be able to be in the building, which I think is a huge plus, and we really appreciate the league allowing him to do that. So I think he'll be able to, you know, kind of follow along with where we are and stay in it from that standpoint. And I think that's really all he can do. And just make sure he's on top of things and really understanding how we game plan, what our process is. As far as getting ready for a game, he'll get a chance to see that firsthand.
You have a lot of wide receivers, obviously. How many thoughts of numbers you might end up with?
No, we haven't really gotten into that yet. I'm sure, you know, myself and Sashi and Paul and Andrew will have that conversation here pretty soon. Some very talented young men in that room, you know, and obviously all of them can't stay, so... someone's going to get some really good players. But at the same time, I know we'll make sure that the guys we keep are the guys that we need to keep here that have a chance to help our football team.
Any point of emphasis for Robert this week to try to distribute the ball in different ways? And again, they're just kind of relying on the long ball.
Yeah, no. I'm not going to say, you know, it's really important for him to distribute. I think it's really important just to run our offense, you know, and I know what you're meaning because last week, I mean, what it's been is long ball heaven here. You know, but no, we do need to move the ball around a little bit. I think everybody knows we can throw it down the field, but I think there's a lot of other things we can do too. So we just got to continue to keep improving. Just keep completing the ball. I think he was, what, 5 or 6 last week and had good completion a week before that. I mean, we know he knows how to complete the ball. It's just running our offense and understanding where the ball going, just understanding the National Football League game, you know, just how fast it is and how things change and how defenses work. You know, it's just the experience. He needs to get the experience, and he'll get the opportunity to play and probably play longer than he has this week all year. So that would be important for him.
Mm-hmm. You know, losing some weight, knocking rust off. To see him do what he did against a Pro Bowl corner the other night, what did you learn about him?
All those things you just mentioned, he's pretty close to being there. You know, I think he's in better shape than he was, obviously. He's lost weight. I mean, he looks like Josh. What I've learned is that he's a really good football player that can do a lot of different things. You know, so again, he's just another tool that we'll add to our arsenal once we get him back, and we'll continue to keep growing him. But I mean, I think you guys all know what he is. I do now, and looking forward to getting him back.
What would you like to see out of Corey Thursday night, and then can he kind of fast track this to be where you need him to be week 1?
Yeah, I mean, he needs to go do it. You know, I think he's getting back to the grind of it because he's been consistently in practice. So I think any time a player can practice, I think it's the most important thing for young players. They need to practice in order to have a chance to play good. So he's been very consistent in practice. And, you know, he needs to go out and play the game this week on Thursday and then prepare himself for next week, you know, because, I mean, the intensity and how things are played in the National Football League in regular season is much different than preseason. I think we all respect that. So he's got some big challenges ahead of himself, but I think he'll be up to the task. You know, this Mary Kay, I don't, you know, again, everybody's entitled to their opinion, you know, and, you know, freedom of speech and all that. So I try not to get into any of that. You know, Colin's on another team, and, I'm really not supposed to even be commenting about a player on another team. So, you know, what I'm trying to do is win a football game, you know, and trying to get our team better. So, I mean, I know that's the big story that's going on, but I'd rather just kind of stay away from all that at this point. Well, I think I'm going to watch everything, you know, along with our executive staff. You know, I think, again, we're at the stage of trying to put our best team together. How many spots, you know, what the numbers are, I'm not sure of that. But, obviously we all know there are some. You know, there's 53 that we got to make sure that we have here. So we'll work at it, and we'll see how this thing shakes out. Thank you very much.
That's Browns head coach Hugh Jackson talking about what to expect against the Chicago Bears tomorrow night at First Energy Stadium. The starters will play a little bit. He's going to go by feel. I'd expect no more than a series or two for them. And then a lot of guys fighting for their NFL lives will be on the field for the Browns and the Bears in that one at First Energy Stadium tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. When we come back, we will be joined by Sir Andrew Gribble from ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app to talk about what he's looking forward to in that game, the recent moves by the Browns in the last couple of days, and much, much more. Plus, we'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Zagura Wilhelm, and soon Gribbs on CBD.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura here in the Dog Bowl with Matt Wilhelm, joined by our guest at this time, Sir Andrew Gribble. What's up, Gribbs?
Huh? What's going on, guys?
Gribbs, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Tape delay.
A little tape delay. We're on a little delay, but we're going to get that up to speed here rather quickly. Gribbs, Hugh Jackson's decision to play the starters. Let's start with that. Your thoughts?
I guess I'm not surprised. I guess when you have a performance like the Browns did in the third preseason game, you want a little bit more positive momentum. I think it's something where he's clearly rolling the dice just a little bit because you don't want to have injuries happen. But obviously, injuries can happen anywhere in football, so I guess it's no different than, you know, Teddy Bridgewater goes down non-contact in practice. Things can happen anywhere, so you might as well just go out there and let the guys play a little bit. Make them feel a little bit better about themselves going into the season opener. And I think that's the ultimate goal. But still, I think this will mostly resemble a fourth preseason game with the kind of players you're seeing out there. It can be a lot of Cody Kessler and a lot of players who ultimately will not make this team, but a lot of players who are fighting for those last few spots on the roster and will put their best foot forward there.
And you mentioned those players who are fighting. Is there three to five players that come to the top of your head that you really feel, you know, based on their performance in this almost insignificant game, a la Kaywan Williams and Isaiah Crowell, can make this football team?
You know, I look at like three position groups that kind of jump out, and I think the first one is on offense, on the offensive line. I think it's a matter of if you're going to decide whether to keep seven or eight, because I think you're looking at probably keeping both those rookies to get you to that seventh point. But can a guy like Alvin Bailey make you want to keep eight? Because he's got that versatility and experience that he can play tackle, he can play guard. I think he's a very valuable guy that you could have on your roster, but it comes down to numbers. I think most throughout last season you kept seven. There were times last year where the Browns had eight on their roster. When they cut him down last year, it was six, because they then added Austin Pastore on waivers. So, right. I mean, this can go either way with how many offensive linemen you keep. Seven is probably the average number, but maybe this will be organized a little different. I look on at wide receiver. I think there's some dynamics there with kind of what you maybe have with Marlon Moore. Is he going to be ready to go Thursday? Maybe not, but you gauge how serious that injury is. Taylor Gabriel was one of the bright spots last week in Tampa. I think he's in the mix there. And then you may or may not have Ricardo Lewis back out there this week, who's been out for a few weeks with a hamstring, but he's been valuable on special teams as well. So I think those are some decisions to make. And then I think the secondary is wide open beyond the obvious top few guys. And I think a player, whether or not he's ready, is Tracy Howard, the rookie. He's kind of out there fighting for a spot. The guys like Charles Gaines, players looking for that last final spot at cornerback. I think those are a few jobs that could maybe be won in this last game.
When you look at the guys who've been playing a lot on special teams, Don Jones was on this team last year, on this team perhaps again this year, always with the first team special teams unit. I think when Barkevius Mingo was traded, what it did is open up a spot for a designated special teams guy, because I think that's what Mingo is going to ultimately be. Could Don Jones make this team in that capacity?
Yeah, I think so. And because, like you said, Mingo is a valuable guy on all those teams, and I think you're going to need at least a couple of those on this roster. I mean, you got guys like, I think Tank Carter is someone that's likely to make the team and fills that kind of all-purpose role, but you need more of those guys. And I think that there probably is a role for Don Jones in that capacity. You probably never would see him out at safety because you got guys in front of him like Derek Kindred, Raheem Moore. So I think there is room for that, and maybe that's where, even if he's not healthy for the opener or right now, where Marlon Moore could be involved because he's someone that Chris Tabor loves. And we saw the effort on that punt return touchdown that Marlon Moore had, just sprinting from across the field, ran about 70 yards, it looked like, to try to catch that guy. I mean, the guy is really good on special teams. So if Tabor gets a couple of those guys, you would look at Don Jones and Marlon Moore.
When you talk about the cornerback room and the competition being open there, I think beyond, you know, Joe Hayden, Tremont Williams, Jamar Taylor, Justin Gilbert, I think it's wide open for those last two spots at corner. Is that the one position? Because for me, it is, that I think there's a good chance that maybe positions number 5 and 6, or at least number 6, or maybe it's number 5 when it all shakes out, isn't here right now.
Yeah, I think that defensive back and potentially a pass rusher, you know, that might come available after the waiver claims, or maybe if these two punters don't work out, maybe you got to go to a waiver wire again for one of those guys. So it's interesting, because also then you throw in the thing with Justin Gilbert with a concussion. I mean, these can take a few weeks to get back, so you might have to make some decisions that you might not have made a week ago just to get your roster ready for that first season opener. So, you know, I think that there definitely could be. I mean, the Browns are high up on the waiver claim order. I think once these 53 is set on Saturday, I think it's far from over. I think there's a few moves to be made. Last year, I think the total was 4 moves were made between the 53 and the first game of the season.
One of
last
which
year
was Terrell Pryor, I believe.
Yeah, Terrell Pryor was waived, and Turpin was claimed. Terrence West was traded. Pastore was picked up. And I believe, was it Austin Davis was signed after the 53 as well last year. So, I mean, it's one of the busiest weeks of the year, and I think that's why we're talking about hypotheticals now and getting into the 53, but I think there's going to be a lot of different pieces a week later.
Andrew, talk about the backup running back position. We're probably going to see a lot of Raheem Mostert and Terrell Watson in this final preseason game. Do you believe we could keep 4 in the running back room? And if so, who do you think has the edge right now? And then go into what they actually do in the Bears game to solidify their role on this team.
Yeah, I mean, if you keep 4, it probably would be Mostert, and Watson would probably be your 3 and 4. It depends on where Mostert is health-wise. He wasn't available last week against the Buccaneers. I think what Mostert, the value of him is, I think he's this team's best kickoff returner right now as well.
And a solid
and plays,
player.
Yeah. Yes. He's a core team guy. He made a couple tackles in the Falcons game. So I think he's a valuable guy. And again, we just don't know the severity of the injury, but I don't think it'd be enough to hurt his progress. I think Watson looked pretty good, I think, against the Falcons. Had a lot of carries in that game. He's poised to perhaps have a huge amount of carries in this game because you probably consider both Duke and Crowell starters in terms of how much reps you're giving those guys. So I think you would keep 4, but then that raises the question on, are you keeping a fullback as well?
Right.
If you want to lump that in with the running backs, if you lump in with the tight ends. Yeah, so he's the last guy on the roster that kind of fits that spot. So, and then you go to the tight ends. Are you going to keep all 4 of those guys? There's currently 5, but do you keep 4 or do you keep 3 and a fullback? So a lot of decisions over the next couple of days.
Gribbs, obviously a lot's happened. Paul Kruger's been released. We know that Austin Davis has been released. Andy Lee's been traded. Mingo's been traded since last time we talked to you. Kind of what's your overall take on the moves that the Browns made and what it means for this year and for the future?
I think when you bunch them up in a week, it seems like a lot, and it's kind of surprising. But I think if you go isolated one by one, a lot of them make some sense in what the Browns are thinking, especially when you look at the Andy Lee situation and get a 4th-round pick for a punter with where this team is at now. I think that's an incredible get, and you found a team that really needed a punter. You know, they're kind of a missing
fourth
piece.
Round pick for a punter.
Yeah, I mean, it was, but they viewed it as they couldn't have a championship team with a big question mark at punter, and they probably overpaid for that position to ensure that they would have a good player at that
spot.
Like,
I don't know if people remember, but coming off of his Super Bowl season with the Baltimore Ravens, Jim Harbaugh traded a 6th-round pick to get Anquan Boldin. The Browns got a 4th-round pick for a punter.
Yeah, and I think the Jaguars are still hearing it about how they drafted
Hello?
A punter. They drafted a punter a few years ago over Russell Wilson. the Jags did. So, I mean, it's just one of those, like, it's interesting. But I think the Kruger one probably surprised people the most outside the building. And I think that it's just – it's tough because now you're putting – I'll just be interested to see how Ogba readjusts to the outside linebacker position. I think that's going to be interesting to watch Thursday. That's one of the most intriguing position spots right now, is how Ogba, after a month on the defensive line, gets back to maybe a spot he was supposed to be playing at and still presents the same kind of havoc that he's supposed to at that position.
I just think we're going to see so many more four-man fronts. I think he's going to be playing more.
Right, and that led me in my next question for Andrew, and Nathan kind of posed this to me earlier, is if we do in fact see more four-man fronts than three, you know, in the next coming weeks as Ray Horton tries to adjust and find the right group, what's your perspective on that? Is that a good thing? And then also, where does Danny Shelton fit in that mix if we do see a heck of a lot more four-man front?
Yeah, I mean, it you have to work with what you got. And I think that we clearly saw a lot of tinkering against Tampa Bay, but ultimately it wasn't all that successful. I mean, you saw some guys make some plays, but ultimately Tampa Bay marched down the field a few times, so maybe you scale that back. But I think with Danny, I mean, you just got to see more. I mean, I think that's what the Browns coaches want, and I think that Jamie Meter has just been great in the preseason and someone that you have a hard time keeping off the field. So, you know, maybe it means less snaps for Danny, but they just have to make the decisions on what's best for this defense, and if that means more four-man fronts, maybe you're going to see less of him. But I still think he's a guy that's going to have a role in this defense for you to have any success this season. We'll just have to see. And I think Danny knows that the performance has not been up to even his own standards. So it's a matter of just getting the most out of him and getting him ready for the season.
Who's somebody that's really surprised you that you think will make this team and play a bigger role than perhaps you thought? And who's somebody that you'd need to see more of? And we'll exclude Danny Shelton, because I think he probably would be near the top of your list anyway.
That's tough. I got to think about that. It's such an easy answer. Like, but based on the beginning of training camp, I did not ever fathom, or even going back to OTAs, I did not fathom Terrell Pryor having this huge of a role on this
sure.
offense. I just did not. It's just what we saw last year and the difference now is worth mentioning over and over again. I mean, I think that's the externally that is the biggest story with what has happened with this Browns offense, and I think it's the ripple effect of his emergence and what it's done to the rest of the wide receiver room, along with the return of Josh Gordon, is just an interesting dynamic. I mean, you brought in four rookie wide receivers before knowing you had anything out of either him or Josh Gordon at that point. So I think that that's made the room overall so much better, and why people are talking about the Browns wide receivers. I think defensively, I'll look at a guy like, just because he missed a lot of camp, I want to see what kind of role and maybe what John Hughes will be for this defensive mm-hmm. line. I think that coming back from missing a lot of football, I think they're going to need him. I mean, you brought in Nick Hayden and it didn't work out. You're going to need one of these defensive linemen to step up, especially now that you've taken Ogba back off that defensive line. You just need to get the best out of whoever you're going to keep. And it may be, if you are going to that more four-man front with more of Ogba and Nassib in there, maybe you only keep five guys on that defensive line and work with those. Or maybe that's the position where you're going to add an extra body in the coming days on the waiver claim.
Who's a bubble guy you're going to be watching tomorrow night that you're pulling for that's like in the Sir Andrew Gribble fave five?
I just love watching Dominique Alexander play. And I don't even know if we can consider him a bubble guy
anymore.
I mean, I think he's been so much fun to watch because he's undersized at the position, but I think he's one of those guys that's consistently brought it every game.
Moves very
well. I think coaches were talking about him back in the spring.
Matt Wilhelm's been talking about him for 30 years.
And it's one of those guys where it seemed like he was a priority undrafted free agent. So this is probably someone that was identified early in the scouting process as someone you could probably get after the draft, but you go all in on trying to get him at that point. I think he's been great. And I think that another guy to watch, and I wonder if it hasn't been as big of a story since being at training camp, you know, Connor Hamlin. I think he's someone that's on the bubble now. And, you know, I think he was great at the start of training camp. I just don't know if the opportunities have been as abundant in the preseason games. I mean, you look at the snap differential between offense and defense throughout the preseason. The offensive guys on the fringe have just not had a ton of opportunities to make plays out there. So he's someone that I'll be interested to see how much of a role he'll have Thursday.
I think if like there's a surprise cut amongst like a move tight end, a pass catching tight end at the 53s somewhere around the league, that person could find their way to the Cleveland Browns. to think that they would want one more good pass-catching tight end.
I believe there may be three players that are going to be added to the Cleveland. So we're going to get to the, down to our final number, and there are going to be three players either through waivers or in the coming days.
In your mind?
I think tight end could definitely be one of them. I think pass rusher is definitely one of them, and I think that either a corner or wide receiver.
Okay.
Where we might be able to add an upgrade that puts a younger player or even a veteran player that has proved enough, we're just going to be able to get more production out of that player more immediately.
I think if like one of these, you know, Jonathan Banks, they're saying, is on the bubble with Tampa. D. Milner, I've heard, is a potential cut with the Jets. I definitely think another corner would not be a bad thing for this team right now.
Did your eyebrows raise a little bit yesterday when Cincinnati released Brandon Tate?
To be a special
returner, kind of guy with the history with Hugh.
He's got the history with Hugh. It's possible. I think if they were looking to keep, say, Darius Jennings, because Darius Jennings was going to fill that role as like the last receiver and kick returner, then I would say yes. But I think if they feel okay about the return situation, probably not.
Yeah.
But interesting. Interesting. It's a tie. Yeah.
You wonder about return guys too, because who was the guy last year with the Chargers that it just kind of fell off the cliff for him return wise? Was it Jacoby Jones?
Jacoby Jones. Jacoby
I mean,
Jones.
He was so good, and then it just
in Baltimore,
and then it just went away. It just,
we were at that game. We saw him have a bad game in Baltimore, and then he was with the Chargers when we went there last year, right?
Yeah, he was on the media program. Yeah, cover guy.
Yeah, and he was. I think was he inactive that day?
Yeah, I think he was hurt. Yeah,
yeah, they were down to like nobody receivers, and Phil Rivers threw for about 8,000 yards on us. They had guys that were lit, and an offensive line that was off the streets in that one.
Yeah.
Oh man, Phil Rivers, your boy Matt Wilhelm. He was good. He was out there after the game playing with like 47,000 children all running around in
all
little
his.
Bolo ties. All his.
All same one.
All his. Same mom. Phil Rivers. All right, Grips, what's coming up this week, and what kind of coverage can people expect as we get down to the 53?
I think we're going to be the place to look at once these rosters finally get announced. We'll be the first ones with the complete rundown, first quotes from your coach about kind of breaking each position group down and the decisions that went into keeping certain guys, not keeping other guys. So the Saturday is a big day for us, and then Sunday, obviously, as we've kept typing up, Sunday's a day to follow as well, because there could be a few transactions after that.
Yes, absolutely. All right, Sir Andrew Gribble, follow him on Twitter @Andrew_Gribble. When we come back, we'll take your calls quickly, and then at 2 o'clock, Mike Silver from NFL.com and NFL Network, our guest here on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dog Pound, through the Cleveland Browns Foundation 50-50 raffle, lucky fans in attendance can enter to win big at Browns home games and make a difference in the lives of Cleveland's youth. Raffle tickets can be purchased at First Energy Stadium through your smartphone on the Browns mobile app or at kiosk locations. Don't miss this chance to support your Cleveland Browns Foundation and kids from Northeast Ohio. Go Browns. Nathan Zgura and Matt Wilhelm back in here with you today. And, of course, Matt, coming up the top of the hour, we will hear from Mike Silver, who wrote a very in-depth article about Hugh Jackson's first 33 weeks. I can't believe it's been 33 weeks,
I know,
by the way,
right?
As the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. And this game tomorrow night, the final tune-up before game one in the season against Philadelphia, September the 11th. And in talking to Gribbs, you know, Dominique Alexander, that was a guy that you had long identified. He looked good. I think the question for me in that room becomes, can Scooby Wright make this team? And he's working as the third-team linebacker, so that means he's got to make it on special teams. Is he the guy that could potentially step up and take the void filled by Barkevious Mingo? Because he's not that exceptional athlete.
Right.
He's more of an instinctual guy who's made some plays and actually one of the highest-graded guys on this defense by Pro Football Focus in the preseason. The question is, is he a guy that you can find a way to keep either on the 53 for a while or to get to your practice squad?
I think he may, I mean, the latter of the two. I think he may be a shoo-in for practice squad. And the reason why, I think a lot of it has to do with the play of the players in front of him, meaning the emergence of Dominique Alexander, and even for an undersized guy, his speed, his nose for the football, his ability to play on every single special team, as well as Tank Carter. Tank Carter solidified his role on this football team by making plays when on defense, as well as being a stalwart, as he's always been on special teams. So there's been no doubt in the minds of these coaches, and there's really no room for Scooby Wright. As I said, you might have to carry more corners. Gribbs talked about carrying, you know, an eighth lineman, so that's one there in that room. Maybe an extra wide receiver. No, so we don't really know where that extra spot's going to come from, but almost no teams carry five inside linebackers.
No, and certainly it would be a little bit of a surprise, I think, if somebody did. They did go that way with the inside linebackers. I think that when you look at this, I think that special teams guy's more likely to be a Marlon Moore or a Don Jones.
Agree.
Either at receiver or at safety, even though Don Jones is a safety, but you probably wouldn't put him on the field very often.
Collectively, you could keep Watson and Mostert, as we discussed, last segment with Gribbs as well. Keeping four running backs, and either Mostert or Watson becomes your special teams guy. And we've seen Mostert do it, and he showed a lot of value as a kick returner.
Yes, he certainly did. All right, we're going to take a break, because when we come back, Mike Silver, who wrote an article which you can find right now at NFL.com/33weeks, about Hugh Jackson's first 33 weeks as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Great in-depth look at Hugh Jackson's experience thus far, and we'll kind of pick Mike's brain about his good friend Hugh Jackson when we return.